Bad Little Doggy, and from 99's with a little help from our friends, 30 Days in a Hole. I'm B. Stu at Planet Sound in downtown Hartford. It was back in 1994 when guitarist Warren Haynes and bassman Alan Woody of the Allman Brothers were looking for another creative outlet. They hooked up with drummer Matt Apps, and Government Mule was born. In 2000, Alan Woody passed away, and rather than sink in sorrow, the Mule plowed on. And after 8 albums, a DVD, and a film, Government Mule's Warren Haynes and Matt Apps, along with Danny Lewis on keys and Andy Hess on bass, are doing what the Mule does best. They're working their asses off. Government Mule is on the road, headlining their own tour and opening dates for Kid Rock, as well as recording a new studio album. In town for a 3-day stint, please welcome from Government Mule, Warren Haynes. On behalf of myself, 106.9 WCCC, and all our listeners, I just want to thank you for being with us today.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
So, I guess one of the questions we all want to know, you know, all the work that you have, you still have found time to record a live solo effort. You did the Lone EP, and we're expecting a solo studio effort from you any day now. When do you sleep, and how's the album coming?
I sleep every chance I get. The album is coming great, except we haven't decided what it's going to be yet. I have all this studio stuff in the can, and I have a lot of live stuff in the can. One of the things that we're getting a lot of feedback on is people would like to really hear my live set from Bonnaroo be released, and so that's something we're considering, too. We have all this great stuff in the can. It's just a matter of when it can come out and what order. So hopefully late April, we'll either be getting the studio stuff that I've been preparing or the live from Bonnaroo set. And at the moment, I'm kind of leaning toward the live thing.
And you think we'll see a 2004 release on that?
Absolutely. And we're also working on a new Government Mule studio record that we're hoping to put out in September.
Right on. Yeah.
That was my next question. The new studio album for the Mule, is that going to be up just a single album?
Yeah, all new material that nobody's heard yet, and we're about halfway through it now. And when this tour is over, we'll go back in the studio and finish up.
Great, can't wait for that.
We're really excited because I feel like it's the first band effort since Life Before Insanity. Mm-hmm. All the stuff we've done since then has been an amazing experience working with all these guests and all the bass players, but to be back in that band mindset is kind of comforting.
Well, we'll find out more about Government Mule and Warren Haynes. Are you ready to play a tune for us?
Sure, why not?
All right.
Mysterious, blown in with the night, all this beauty captured in the frame, visibly shaken, but never stirred, drives them insane. I see the way she plays him in. And I know I've got to know her name. She's so beautifully broken, shaped by the wind, dangerously twisted. Here I go again. See the way she casts her spell. It's like drowning in moonlight. Discards them when she's done. They're lost in her twilight. I watch her move from star to star. And I wonder why it feels so right. She's so beautifully broken. Barely see the floor, especially from a distance, which is always how I fall. Why do I fall for the dangerous ones, the ones that never learn to let go? Pretend that I can break her. Well, she's already been so beautifully broken, shaped by the wind, dangerously twisted. But here I go again. Here I go again.
CCC.
Yeah. Everything okay in there? Other than me bumping that microphone? Phones are great. Phones are great. I just, right at the beginning, I bumped that mic for a second. Well, hopefully I bumped it in time.
WCCC. Beat Stu at Miles Mangino's Planet of Sound in Hartford with my special guest from Government Mule and the Allman Brothers Band, Warren Haynes. You and I both know that no matter how well you plan, right down to the smallest detail, when you're dealing with musicians, mobile recording facilities, camera crews, lighting, caterers, and a house full of fans, nothing ever goes as planned. But how about that night last May at the Sanger Theater in New Orleans, where the concert was not only recorded for a double live CD, but filmed for a DVD as well? That was a magic night. You were on stage for over 6 hours.
Yeah, it was a very magical night. We rehearsed for about 3 hours that afternoon, and then played for 6 hours. And it was incredible. I mean, I think we were so stoked just with the fact that all these wonderful people were going to join us. And people were coming in at the last minute. Fred Wesley, we were actually at soundcheck, and someone said, "Fred Wesley's here, is there something he can play?" And of course, I'm the biggest James Brown fan in the world. I grew up, when I was 8 years old, listening to James Brown, trying to sing like James Brown in my bedroom. And Fred Wesley was the trombone player and arranger for a lot of those great songs, and he was a big hero of mine, so I said, absolutely. The same with Paul Jackson Jr., who co-wrote Chameleon, the Herbie Hancock hit. Paul was the bass player on the original Headhunters with Chameleon. And those were last-minute additions, but they were ones that made sense, and when we go back and look at them now, it looked at it as if we planned it that way, but we surely didn't. Things just fell into place, which is not to say that there aren't mistakes and blemishes, and But I think, I know in our eyes, and in most of our audience's eyes, that's part of it anyway. You don't want to strive for perfection, you just want to strive for beauty, you know, and beauty contains blemishes and mistakes.
It's an amazing album.
Thank you. I'm really pleased with it. Originally it wasn't going to be quite so long, but once we looked at it and listened to it back, we thought, well, it's all good enough to release, and the fans would probably like it that way, so let's just do it. Originally, we were just going to go through and put the highlights out, and we weren't going to play 6 hours, but I'm glad we did.
Let's talk about your songwriting. You wrote a big hit for a country star, Garth Brooks.
Yeah.
It was called Two of a Kind, Working on a Full House.
Yeah.
Now, you're a singer, a songwriter, and a guitarist. Put those three in order for us, and if you had to give up two and keep one, which would have been?
I couldn't do it. it's always been equal to me, even though, you know, different people know me for different reasons. And if you go to Nashville, and you say, Warren Haynes, oh, yeah, that's that songwriter. You know, Allman Brothers fans, yeah, that's that Sly guitar player, you know. Fans that have gotten to know more what I do understand how singing and songwriting and guitar playing have always been equal to me. And I'm glad to be known for anything, but, you know, I know that certain people think more of me as a guitar player, and I guess that's understandable for me coming through the Allman Brothers and being honored and blessed enough to kind of inherit that role, you know. And when I joined the Allman Brothers, it was apparent that they already had a singer. So I was like, Greg Allman is one of the few singers that I would just gladly take a backseat to, and he was one of my heroes growing up, you know. And they've been so kind to let me sing more and more and more through the years and to write more and more of the material. It's the best of all worlds for me.
Right. It's Peace 2, 106.9 WCCC. Speaking with Warren Haynes from Government Mule and the Allman Brothers Band. Warren, how about a couple more songs for us? You bet. Live from Planet Sound, it's Warren Haynes on The Rock, 106.9 WCCC.
Painted on midnight sky, one swung low, the other at night. I wonder if anybody knows just why I had to shoot him down. Now I lay me down to rest. God bless the boy with my bullet in his chest. She can't bless me. So I lost my soul out on the glory road. Ladies, won't you just sit in style? Got some gold in my saddlebags, and I'd trade it for a smile. Let's have dinner on the devil tonight. Out of their beat, they'll repay. Won't you come along? I'll be riding on for you someday. Won't you come along? I'll be riding on the glory road someday.
Sound in Hartford. Warren has a new solo CD due out in stores soon, followed by a new Government Mule studio. That release will be later this year. Warren, now you were just a kid back in the early 70s when the band that you would eventually play for, the Allman Brothers Band, they were making records, they were touring the world, they were raising hell. When you picked up the guitar at age 12, how deep was your determination, and did you know then that the guitar would become the tool of your trade?
Yeah, I started singing when I was about 7 or 8 years old, and it was all gospel. Well, the first sound that moved me was like black gospel music on the radio. Then when I heard James Brown and Wilson Pickett, Otis Redding, and the Temptations and the Four Tops, that it instantly turned to soul music. Then my oldest brother brought home a Sly and the Family Stone record, and that kind of built a bridge to rock music. Then I discovered Hendrix and Cream, and I told my dad I want a guitar. Because all of a sudden, everything I was listening to prior, the voice was the center. You know, the voice was the focal point. But when I heard Hendrix and Cream, all of a sudden the guitar was the center, and I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. And I had heard Ray Charles and B.B. King, and they both focused equally on their voices and playing. And I thought that was kind of cool too. So I thought, well, maybe I can do both of these things. But once I picked up guitar, I was pretty serious about it. My oldest brother had a guitar the year before, and I think my dad noticed that I was more serious about it than he was. So when it came time for me to ask for a guitar, it was only $59. But he was like, yeah, okay. And I never put it down. You know what I mean? When I was a kid, I just played all the time. And stayed back in my room and tried to sing like all my favorite singers and tried to learn how to play guitar solos. And just music was always there, you know.
Not long ago, Rolling Stone magazine came out with one of those top 100 guitarist lists of all time.
Yeah.
I call it the list that launched a thousand arguments.
Right? Or at least.
You were ranked an impressive number 23. Now that's like twice as far up the list as one of your guitar idols, Frank Zappa, and almost three times as far as another Allman Brothers guitarist, Dickie Betts. What was your reaction when you saw that list?
Well, I didn't expect to make that list at all. We got a call from Rolling Stone saying that I had made the list, but they wouldn't tell anybody what number. They just wanted to interview me for the magazine. So I figured, okay, I'm number 99. That's pretty cool. And I wouldn't argue with that. You know, I mean, I'd be flattered to be number 99.
Just to be on that list.
I was really shocked. I still remember getting the fax of the list and going, "Oh, that's got to be a mistake." I was very honored. You know, I don't necessarily agree with all those things. You know, it's like awards when you win awards. It's nice to be acknowledged and to know that your hard work is paying off and that people are recognizing it, but it doesn't mean you have to agree with it. There was a lot of people that that didn't make the list at all that would have made my list. And there were a lot of people that did make the list that would not have made my list.
I agree, too.
But a lot of them, I think a lot of it was good. You know, for the most part, probably two-thirds of that list was pretty similar to my list. You know? Mm-hmm. First thing I did when they sent me the list, I started crossing out names and adding one over here. Like, no, this guy's got to go, but this needs to be here, you know. I couldn't believe there were a lot of people that were overlooked. Billy Gibbons was overlooked.
Oddly Creed.
Oddly's a dear, dear friend, you know. And I think Oddly probably feels like I do, that we're not even concerned with whether or not we made the list. It's like, what about Albert King? Albert King's not on that list. And, you know, Billy Gibbons, Mick Taylor. I don't think Bonnie Raitt made it, which is a real shame, because I think Bonnie's tremendous. And there were a lot of them that should have been different, but at the same time, I'm just like, thanks.
There'll be another list, and there'll be 100 more.
Yeah.
Warren, getting back to the Deepest End Volumes 1 and 2, you had, it was close to 24 bass players assisted you in the recording of those albums. John Entwistle, Jack Bruce, Les Claypool, Chris Squire, Billy Cox, just to name a couple of them. Who was the best or the worst to work with?
It sounds cliche to say this, but everybody was great. Everybody was there for the same reason, because they're at the top of their field, you know. Nobody was disappointing, even from a personal standpoint. I mean, I think we went into it knowing that everybody was gonna hold up their end musically. But we were all a little hesitant that maybe some of these people, being who they were, might come in with a big ego or attitude. And it just didn't happen. You know, maybe because they were there because Alan Woody had passed away, maybe because they were all in great company. I don't know. Maybe all those things combined, but I know when John Entwistle came in, we were all like walking on eggshells, just like, oh man, John Entwistle, you know. And he was so nice and cracking jokes and great sense of humor, real professional, real easy to deal with. Invited us all out to sit in with his band, and we became instant friends, you know. And then he passed away, and we realized later that those were the last sessions he did, the ones with us, and that's kind of poignant as well. Jack Bruce, probably Alan Woody's biggest hero of all time. And to stand there next to Jack, who's playing through Woody's rig, you know, we had Woody's rig there, his bass rig there, and we gave everybody the opportunity of playing through it, and almost everybody did. There were only a handful of people out of two records that didn't. And so I think that helped bring Woody's spirit there even more than it was already there. Everybody checked their ego at the door. You know, it was funny because in the beginning we had problems getting Bootsy Collins to commit. He was committed 1 minute, then he was backing out, then he was committed again, then he was backing out. And I think it was just a communication breakdown. He didn't really understand exactly what it was we were doing and why. And when we finally had a nice conversation And I think when he really got through all the red tape and all the middlemen and figured out what it was we were doing and who else was part of the project and what was behind it, the next thing you know, he came through with flying colors, did this beautiful bass solo dedicated to Woody, and then turned around and gave his pay to Woody's daughter.
Nice.
Which was really cool. But everybody was like that. I was just so blown away with how everybody just rose to the occasion. And the we're about half of those people we knew and about half of them we didn't know. And it was a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
His piece, Stu, 106.9 WCCC, with Warren Haynes, live at Miles Mangino's Planet of Sound in Hartford. Warren, I think we have time for two more tunes. You want to hear some more music?
Yeah!
Warren Haynes, live
at
Planet of Sound in the Rock, 106.9 WCCC.
So we're not live, so I can tune.
Wore a song around his neck like some metal of honor. Carried his wisdom like a knife. An empty pocket was a temporary chain. Knowing you got it coming ain't no crime. Every blue note that rolled off his tongue, you feel his soul twisting right into. Nobody knew where he came from, oh, but everybody knew. Everybody knew. Sometimes at night, alone. some broken down dressing, some major city. The thunder plays an old familiar tune. Despise the face of a distant angel outside beneath the halo moon. Finger on the chitter, needle in the vein. One more bullet might be your last ride. This ain't no no-show. This ain't no nervous breakdown. And it sure as hell ain't the time to let the fool decide the sin's the real thing. No doubt about it. Who cares if they love you when you're gone? This was the real thing. So you were put here for a reason. What gives you the right to quit when you're tired? To raise the dead.
Concert. It's a double CD and a DVD with over 6 hours of Government Mule for less than $25. See Government Mule live tonight at the Hippodrome in Springfield, tomorrow night at the Palladium in Worcester, and Sunday night at the Capitol Center in Concord, New Hampshire. Be sure to check out mule.net and warrenhaines.net. Thanks to Warren Haynes. Miles Mangino and his staff here at Planet of Sound. Thanks to everyone at the Rock 106.9 WCCC. Thank you, beautiful people. It's Pete Stu on the Rock 106.9 WCCC.
All right.
All right.
Thank you.